Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, March 2nd, 2020. Some South Sudanese say they are not benefiting from being members of the East African community.
My humble advice is that all of you here, you should revisit and read thoroughly and understand it, what the treaty says, so that the next debate, when it is allowed, you can speak from an informed perspective.
And the EU donates money for education in Sudan.
The European Union remains firmly behind the political transition in Sudan and to the reform agenda of this transactional government, which is developing an extraordinary and interesting political process.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese in Juba want the country to quit its membership in the East African community. Many residents of Juba town say South Sudan is unlikely to benefit from its membership in the regional bloc. David Monodanga reports for VOA from Juba.
Some forum participants said South Sudan joined the EAC at the wrong time when the country was in the midst of a devastating civil war that weakened the economy. They also say South Sudan lacks strong institutions, which holds it back from competing with other countries on an equal footing. Kevin Abalo, founder of the local NGO Resilience Organization, says she does not understand why Uganda and Kenya do not give free visas to South Sudanese like other East African member states.
And by the way, our families are out in South Sudan, so they really believe that if the visa is free, South Sudanese will benefit. But again, I think it is the work of civil society organizations together with the Ministry of EAC or the Secretariat of EAC in South Sudan to work hard on that to make sure that it happens as soon as possible. If we are East African community, we need free visa. I've been to Burundi, I've been to Tanzania, I've been in these other African countries. I don't think it's different when they still pay visa to South Sudan, but why is it hard for Uganda and Kenya?
South Sudan also charges Ugandan and Kenyan citizens visa fees for entering the country. Former Presidential Advisor on Economic Affairs, Agretisa Sabuni, says it is not up to Uganda or Kenya to offer free visas to South Sudan, but he says the South Sudanese government should observe each and every commitment, protocol, and law of the East African Community Treaty.
It's supposed to be South Sudan after having met the requirements and that its internal processing to notify the member states that I am now going to comply with the issue governing free movement of persons. I am hereby removing the charging of immigration fees from all partner state nationals. Please reciprocate. This is what South Sudan is supposed to have done.
Sabuni says South Sudan failed to inform the East African community that it was ready to allow visa-free entry to nationals of other member states within the three-year deadline which expired last August. He says it makes no sense for South Sudan to collect visa and immigration fees from Kenyans and Ugandans and expect free entry to those countries. Ambassador Professor Joram Biswaro, head of the African Union mission in South Sudan, says the basic difference between the current EAC and the original is that the latter was elite-driven and imposed by colonial masters, while the former is people-driven.
My humble advice is that all of you here, you should revisit and read thoroughly and understand it, what the treaty says, so that the next debate, when it is allowed, you can speak from an informed perspective.
Mau Mau Athien, the Undersecretary for East African Affairs in South Sudan's Foreign Affairs Ministry, says South Sudan should remain a member of the regional bloc.
will give us skills, will give us knowledge, will give us relations with our brothers and sisters in the East African community, and a lot of other things.
South Sudan applied to join the EAC immediately after declaring its independence in 2011. It was accepted into the bloc in 2016, but is in arrears by tens of millions of dollars in paying its EAC dues. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
The European Union is pledging 100 million euros to help Sudan's government implement reforms in the country. The announcement follows a commitment from EU to help the country realize its economic potential. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Joseph Borrell, EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs, made the announcements during joint press conference in Khartoum over the weekend alongside Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok. Borrell says the EU is optimistic about political change in Sudan.
The European Union remains firmly behind the political transition in Sudan and to the reform agenda of this transitional government, which is developing an extraordinary and interesting political process.
Last November, the EU donated 55 million euros to Sudan to help the government provide humanitarian assistance to families affected by years of fighting in parts of Sudan. The top EU official praised Sudan's progress towards reforms, calling it a step towards true democracy.
We commend the steps that have already been taken to fulfill the ideals of freedom, peace, democracy, and justice, to strengthen human rights, and to take on economic reforms.
The EU official vows to continue engaging the transitional government in Sudan to help it realize the dreams and aspirations of the Sudanese revolutionaries. He said he believes political change in Sudan will continue to inspire many countries in the region and around the world.
The EU will continue to play an active role in supporting and consolidating the political transition in Sudan. You are a light of hope in the troubled region. We would like to accompany your country in the path to political and economic reforms and to remain at the side of the Sudanese people.
Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok welcomes the announcement and says the Sudanese people shall remain vigilant about the revolution, which he said ended 3 decades of authoritarian regime. Hamdok says thousands of Sudanese women and youth remain hopeful that the transitional government shall bring about necessary reforms.
Your support to our struggle and to our people is highly appreciated. You stood with us during our dark ages to support our people, and we very much appreciate this. The change that took place in Sudan is profound, it's deep, it's here to stay.
Many Sudanese say they are hopeful that Hamdok, who worked earlier with the United Nations, will use his external relations to help build Sudan's economy after years of economic hyperinflation. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
An analyst says the governance of the 10 states in South Sudan and the 3 administrative areas is not clear. Jane Kane Edward is an associate clinical professor at Fordham University in New York. She says forming 3 administrative areas will create a lot of problems for governance in South Sudan.
And the reason is because it has to do with land issues, and the people who live in those areas, maybe they don't feel like being administered separately, particularly the Ruang administrative area. There are different communities who live there, maybe, and they feel like, why do they have to be cut off and a new area is created? So that's the major problem.
When you say cut off, what do you think is going to happen?
Because it was part of the unity state, you know? And if we really want to stick to the 10 state, then the president should have just reverted back to the 10 state without creating the new administrative areas.
What do you think is going to happen just, you know, in terms of governance? It's obviously the oil-rich part of one of the oil-rich areas of the country. How are they going to actually govern that area?
That's the major problem. I don't know if they're going to appoint specific administrators to govern those areas. I have no idea. But from my perspective, I think it's not a good idea actually to create those three administrative areas because of the fact that the 10 states, when the agreement was signed in 2015, it was the 10 states, including those areas in the states that they're carved out from. I don't know how they're going to administer that and whether they're going to appoint governors or administrators and then also ministers as the rest of the 10 states. I'm not sure.
Keir was always talking more than these amount of states, and then he did finally back down and came down to the original 10 states. But with these three administrative areas, that seems to be the big, huge $64,000 question. You know, how is it going to be administered? How is it going to be governed? Especially when there's that bad blood between Machar and Keir.
Exactly. And also it has to do with oil. And, you know, most of the government officials actually are fixated on the oil industry in South Sudan because that's the only source of income for the country. So that's going to create a lot of problems. And instead of actually sitting down and forming the government, appointing the ministers and the governors for the 10 states so that people actually sit down and work and address some of these issues that you just, the questions that you just raised.
So is Ruang mostly Dinka right now or mostly Nuer? And do you think that'll enter into the, you know, discussions of who should run it?
Yeah, that's going to be a major problem because I'm not sure in that area whether, I'm sure there's a combination of Nuer, but majority Nuer because it was part of Unity State, actually. So I'm not sure exactly the percentages of the ethnicities that live in that area. But it has nothing to do with ethnicities. I think people have to think about the people who are living in those areas and how, whether they were consulted in the first place, actually, for those areas to be carved out from the previous states, like Jungle State and Unity State.
So you think that most of the people living in Ruang and in Pibor, really, would rather not talk about, you know, being in a specialized administrative area?
That one, I cannot answer that one. Actually, I'm not sure whether how they feel because they're the one living there. But from my perspective, I think if this idea of reverting back to the 10 state just remain with the 10 state as it existed in 2000, when the country gained independence in 2011, that will be the best way. And also my concern is that everybody's now, okay, praising the president that he reverted back to the 10 state. But the point that is missing is that when the 32 states actually were created, first the 28 and then the 32 states, when they were created, the president actually made a decree establishing those states and then nullifying the 10 states. But when he reverted back now to the 10 states and the three areas, no decree was presented, actually.
Well, it seems like you're right. Like there wasn't, it didn't go through democratically through the parliament or through government channels.
No.
But it just sounded like he made this decree on the day of the swearing in of the vice presidents. That
exactly, yeah. So there's no, and there's no decree that nullifies the 32 states.
So as far as you're concerned, is it still 32 states or is it 10 states right now?
For me, actually, I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure whether the 10 states are going to stand or not, because my perspective is that to be able to actually believe that the 10 states are back, the three administrative areas should not be included in the 10 states. Secondly, a decree should be issued nullifying the 32 states and then another decree reinstating the 10 states.
That's Jane Kanye Edward, a clinical professor at New York's Fordham University and director of the African Immigration of the Bronx Africa America History Project in New York. She was speaking with my colleague, Carol Van Damme. I would just like to make some corrections here. President Kiir did issue a decree nullifying the 32 states, and he also issued a decree to create 10 states. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at efforts by African countries to contain the spread of coronavirus. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
are you satisfied with the schooling your children are getting?
I will say I'm not satisfied because the government schools are not well acquainted with what they're doing. The teachers don't turn up. I know that maybe in private schools the fees are so high.
Yes, I am satisfied with the schooling because as an African child, the schools here in Africa, I see that they teach children a lot, mostly in the boarding schools. They teach them how to wash, how to take care of themselves while they're young.
Kind of satisfied because I will see that the schools that the children are in are teaching them the basics that they really need in life. And it's not only about majorly the educational aspect of it, but there are also other co-curriculum activities that they're getting involved in.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Nigeria has confirmed its first case of the coronavirus, according to the country's health ministry. This makes Nigeria the first country in sub-Saharan Africa to record a case of the virus, which is blamed for more than 2,800 deaths worldwide. Timothy Obiezu has this report from Abuja.
Nigerian health authorities say the patient is a man from Italy, a country hit hard by the virus, who works in Nigeria and returned from the Italian city of Milan to Nigeria's economic hub, Lagos, days ago. Nigeria's health minister, Emmanuel Osagie, says they are working with airline officials to identify other passengers who may have had contact with the infected patient in order to prevent further spread.
We are working with the airline. We are developing, we are going to get a manifest and then do a contact tracing and find all the people who are there. Usually you get their numbers and their addresses and monitor them. We're not going to assume that all of them are sick or fall sick, but and advise anyone who has any symptoms to report and be monitored.
The coronavirus was first reported in Wuhan, China in December. A recent assessment by the World Health Organization named Nigeria as one of 12 countries in Africa at high risk of the coronavirus threat because of the high level of travel and trade between Nigeria and China. A WHO representative at an Abuja public briefing, Dr. Clement Peter, admits the coronavirus issue is serious and challenging to contain.
Indeed, globally, the sounding from WHO is very clear. We don't know how this outbreak is going to go. While things should be stabilizing in China gradually, many countries are getting cases that have no link to China.
Health authorities in Nigeria have been preparing to handle any possible outbreak and are urging citizens to remain calm.
So we have enough reagents to do the checking now. There are four laboratories in Nigeria that can test for this particular virus. Four are able to test for it. We also have a system for sample transport. A sample can be taken from somewhere and transported to a testing center within a few hours. So that is part of the network that we have prepared.
The coronavirus has killed more than 2,800 people and infected more than 83,000 in over 50 countries. Nigerian health officials are hoping that no other cases turn up in Lagos, one of the largest and most densely populated cities in the world. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
South Africa's plans for the military to evacuate its citizens from the Chinese city of Wuhan has raised questions on the country's preparedness to deal with an outbreak if they bring the coronavirus home. Tuso Khumalo reports from Johannesburg.
According to the government's announcement yesterday, 151 South Africans who are trapped in Wuhan will be evacuated within 14 days. The announcement has raised a national debate on whether the government is up to the task in case one or more of those people test positive on arrival. But the Minister of Health, Zweli Mkhize, says the government is taking no chances and will ensure all of the evacuees are certified coronavirus-free before boarding the plane home.
All nationals that do not meet the medical screening requirements during the pre-screening phase will be referred to the Chinese health system.
Amongst other measures, Mkhize says all the evacuees will be quarantined on arrival under strict conditions for 21 days.
No one will be allowed to enter the zone. Not the media, not the families, not the officials who want to come and inspect from whatever. Only those who are assigned are going to be allowed to be in there.
Medical experts have expressed confidence in South Africa's evacuation plan and are calling for calm. Dr. Angelique Kutsie is with the South African Medical Association.
I think that so far the precautionary measurements that's been put in place by the Department of Health is the correct ones to have. They are following the World Health Organization guidelines. Instead of the 14 days of quarantine, they go for 21 days of quarantine.
The National Institute of Communicable Diseases has emphasized the need to intensify public awareness so that citizens know the symptoms of the virus and how to avoid catching it. Sibongile Walaza is the senior epidemiologist at the National Institute of Communicable Diseases in South Africa.
Making people aware where to get the correct information, because again, there's some lot of information going out there, but just to know the correct platforms where to go where they're looking for information. I think that we've provided, but again, it's something that needs to continue.
South Africa has not recorded any case of COVID-19. However, two South African citizens working on a Japanese cruise ship contracted the virus, and the government says they will remain in Japan until they are successfully treated. Tuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
From Johannesburg, we move to Nigeria, where armed men killed at least 50 people yesterday in attacks on villages in the Nigerian state of Kaduna. Police say about 100 armed men attacked 6 villages in Igabi district, shooting residents and looting and burning homes. Zaid Ibrahim, member of Nigeria's parliament, said assailants began shooting people at random as worshippers left mosques after prayers. Ibrahim and local councillor Deyobu Kerwa told French news agency that the killings were the work of bandits. Kerwa said they accused residents of providing information about their hiding places to soldiers. Kerwa told VOA's Hausa service that the shooters were part of Islamist insurgent group Boko Haram, saying they spared nobody, even Islamic students. Kerwa appealed for President Muhammadu Buhari to send security forces to protect the area. In a new report, a UN investigator is condemning an Eritrean crackdown on fundamental freedoms and religious practices, as well as the country's harsh indefinite military service and widespread abuse. Lisa Schrein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Hopes that Eritrea, which has been accused of human rights abuses, would institute reforms after it signed a historic peace agreement with Ethiopia in 2018 have not materialized. If anything, a UN report on its human rights situation has found widespread human rights violations, including arbitrary arrest, enforced disappearances, sexual violence, and torture. Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in Eritrea, Daniela Kravitz, deplores the government's repression of religious freedom. She says Christians practicing without government approval are arrested, as are those who belong to non-recognized Christian congregations. She says Muslims also are targeted, arrested, and jailed. She finds no justification for Eritrea's failure to reform its compulsory national service. She says that failure cannot be justified on the grounds that economic conditions in the country do not permit job creation or salary hikes for conscripts.
There are, however, immediate measures that the authorities could take that do not depend on economic reforms, such as stopping the ongoing roundups of youth for forced conscription, separating secondary education from military conscription, and putting in place mechanisms to monitor and prevent abuses against conscripts, in particular against female conscripts.
Kravitz is calling for the release of all political prisoners and prisoners of conscience. She says people are arbitrarily arrested because of their opposition to the government or their beliefs as conscientious objectors. She says they often are jailed for decades without any recourse to justice or relief. Eritrean ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Tesfame Kelgeratu, calls the report politically motivated and ill-intentioned. He says it portrays his country in a negative light and does not reflect any of its positive achievements. He notes Eritrea is at peace after two decades of conflict. He says Eritrea is in the process of resolving the many social and economic problems that have arisen during that time, but adds, there is no quick fix. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Redemption Song by Playing for Change. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
The day to cut from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you give to see another songs of freedom? For all I ever heard, redemption song, redemption song. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. And how long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? And some said it's just a part of it. Well, we've got to fulfill the book. Won't you hear me sing another song of freedom? It's all I ever had, oh, redemption song, yes, no, redemption song, redemption song. Wop, chu, wop, chu, wop.
Come on with the people.
Wop, chu, wop, chu, wop.
Come on with the children. For atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book.
won't you help me sing another song of freedom? It's all I ever had. Oh, yeah. Redemption song.
Yes, Lord.
Redemption song. Redemption song. Redemption song.